5. You fed the children to your demons while we were gone? Have you lost your mind?
Completely slack-jawed, Nala stood in the center of the dimly lit room, staring at Kesar. While the red-eyed demon towered over her, she refused to be intimidated by him, especially right now, when she was so furious.
He had fed the children to his demons.
She just kept repeating that, over and over in her mind, because she couldn't believe he'd do something so dumb the 5 minutes she'd left him alone. This matter was far more serious than he could guess. One didn't just lightly go for Serafina's throat. One only did so with a huge army, and he was shy a few thousand demons. He scoffed at her anger.
You would do well to choose another tone, lest I add you to our menu. Remember, but for my goodwill, you'd still be collecting bird shit out in an open field where your gods left you to rot.
And you'll find yourself in the middle of a massive shitstorm when Serafina learns of this. She'll never lead you to her mate now. You can forget ever finding him.
She won't have to. Once we control her spawn, they'll be able to sniff out their sperm donor for us. It's a much easier and quicker solution than yours.
A slow, evil smirk twisted his lips.
Besides, she hasn't returned. I'm thinking she's already betrayed us.
Nala struggled not to roll her eyes at the bastard, but given what he'd done to the last member of her tribe who'd made that mistake, she didn't want to test the demon's patience. While she might be Basilina and a fierce warrior in her own right, she was no match for the ancient demon and his terrifying skills, and that only pissed her off more. She and her tribe had once made the gods themselves flee in terror, but the Galu were another entity entirely, and they'd been birthed for no other purpose than to end pantheons and shatter the gods, which made them extremely lethal, even to the Scythian Amazons. The only member of her tribe who could stand against them was Serafina. No one was quite sure why. While Serafina had always been extremely skilled, something had happened after she'd mated to her dragon that had kicked her abilities up to an entirely new level. Since then, it was why Zeus had frozen them in stone. That had been the only way to stop them from defeating the Greek gods they'd fought against.
My lord.
They both turned to see Kesar's second-in-command, Namtar, approaching with a nervousness that didn't bode well. Especially not for Namtar. Grateful to get Kesar's ire off her, Nala let out a relieved breath at the demon's timing. Bowing to Kesar, he gulped audibly as a bead of sweat rolled down his dark caramel skin. It was obvious he'd rather be anywhere else in the world than right here, right now. He cleared his throat and finally spoke to Kesar.
We have a slight problem, my lord.
The expression on Kesar's face was one of barely restrained murder.
How so?
The children.
Turned Galu.
Namtar shook his head slowly.
No, my lord. They appear to be immune to Galu bites.
Nala wasn't sure which of them was the most stunned by that disclosure.
Pardon?
She gasped, before she could think better of it. Namtar cut his handsome gaze in her direction.
They are not completely Greek. Nor can they be completely Vrikolakaskinigos. They appear to be
something else.
We're not sure what.
Now there was a word she hadn't heard in a long time. It was the original term for her species that the Greeks had used. Ignoring her question, Kesar stepped forward. The red in his eyes intensified as he raked a sneer over her.
What information have you withheld from us about your champion?
She swallowed hard.
None. I swear.
Kesar refused to believe her denial. It was too convenient. How could she not know? These were members of her tribe, born into it, had lived with her for years after their father ran off. Their mother was her primary champion. Surely Nala knew who and what she'd harbored amongst her people. Pissed and cursing under his breath about how he should have left her and her Amazon tribe to rot, Kassar headed from his small throne room to the cell where he'd tossed Serafina's children. Since the Galu were being hunted by the daemons, who were preying on them and using their blood and souls so that the daemons could walk in the daylight, they'd been driven underground and into virtual extinction. For the last few years, Kassar and his handful of loyal demons had played a deadly game of hide-and-seek with their former allies. And all because of a small falling out he and Stryker had had over who to kill, when, and how. And the fact that Stryker had taken issue over Kassar going after his wife, daughter, and, well, him. Though why it would bother the daemon, Kassar couldn't fathom. That was what happened in war. Goals changed. Borders shifted. Battles were won and lost, and new ground gained while some was lost. It happened and should be expected. As a commander, Stryker should know that as well as anyone. In the end, friends and allies didn't matter. Only your cause did. Your allegiance. But sadly, their alliance against the Olympians had dissolved after Stryker had awakened the Greek god War, and the ancient troublemaking entity had turned them against each other. They were no longer unified or after the same things. With one particularly bad night, they'd turned on each other and had splintered. That was the problem with friends. When the time came, and it always did, for the friendship to dissolve, those friends turned to enemies. And they knew the best place to strike to cripple you. Yet now the tables were turning. When Stryker had allowed the Dark Hunters to place the Sumerian amulet around Apollo's neck and temporarily drain the god's powers, he'd unknowingly opened a door for Kassar to slip in, and brought to Kassar a whole new group of allies to play with and feast upon. Just like Stryker, Kassar knew exactly how and where to make the coup de grace against the daemons who turned on his Galu brethren. And he wouldn't hesitate to take it. An eye for an eye, throat for a throat, testicle for testicle. It wasn't in the nature of his species to let any slight go. The Galu had been bred as the final fuck you of their ancient gods to destroy the world should the world destroy them. Knowing that, Stryker should never have turned on them and declared them a food source for his people. That was the ground the daemon was going to be buried upon. At least that was Kassar's thought as he opened the door to the cell where the young werehunters had been chained. He'd expected to find both of them where he'd left them. Instead, the sight of the smoking remains of three headless Galu greeted him. Stunned by the sight, he cocked one regal brow. The chains that had held the young dragons had been ripped from the walls, and the Metriaso collars that he himself had placed around their necks to block their magic and keep them tame were laying in pieces on the ground at his feet.
"What the hell?" he asked slowly.
There was no sign of either young adult dragon. Gaping to the point he exposed his fangs, he turned toward the Amazon queen. Eyes wide, she stared at the damage they'd wrought.
"What happened?"
Namtar shook his head.
"I honestly don't know. By the time Neti and I got the door open, this was what we found."
"How could they do this?"
Kassar towed the remains of the Galu closest to him. There were very few creatures capable of this, and only one he'd ever fought against who could do such. A chill went down his spine at the prospect of facing that hairy bastard again.
"What is the name of their father?"
Nala scowled.
"I'm trying to remember. We never really used it.
You've got to be shitting me. She really couldn't recall something so banal? Or something so vital?" He met her vacuous gaze.
"Was it, perchance, Maxis Drago?
Yes!
But the joy quickly faded from her gaze as she realized it wasn't a good thing that he knew the dragon's name.
How did you know?
How did he know? Sick to his stomach, he exchanged a glare with Namtar.
Son of the Lilitu. It figured.
Still, she had no clue of the monster she'd unknowingly harbored.
What's that?
He laughed at her stupidity, but then, being female, she wouldn't have ever drawn the attention of a Lilit demon. They preyed exclusively on males, and in particular, male demons and gods.
In short, our mothers. The Galu were originally hatched in the eggs of the Lilitu.
Are you telling me that he's your brother?
How he wished it was that simple.
No. We were bred differently by our gods, designed for a specific purpose. He was truly born from the forbidden coupling of a Lilit mother and an Arel father, and raised to be a tool for the ancient gods.
Kassar pierced her with a harsh glare before he rammed home exactly what kind of creature they were dealing with.
And it said, he turned on his own mother in a fit of anger and tore out her throat with his own teeth.
You're serious?
He nodded as he lifted his shirt to expose the wound on his side that had never healed, a vicious bite scar that ran from nipple to hip and forever oozed with dragon venom.
He is not just your dragon bane. He is my personal plague, and the one creature in this universe I would give anything to have in battle one last time.
Anything?
Anything. More than that, he has in his possession something he protects that's a lot more powerful than the Emerald Tablet.
He lowered his shirt.
Forget restoring the old world we once knew. With what he has, we could reign as gods ourselves. We would have the power to not only take life, but to create it, to make and destroy entire worlds and pantheons.
Completely shocked, she gaped at him.
Are you telling me that dumb, idiot dragon who lived in my village
is one of the most powerful and ancient creatures who has ever roamed this planet?
Kassar laughed bitterly.
He was never a dumb animal, you stupid bitch. But for the curse placed on his mother, he would have been born a Nasaru,
a being of purest light. They were the protectors of order and the defenders of the primal gods, resolute warriors of the highest honor and noblest hearts. Their place was to remain away from the world and those who lived in it, so that they wouldn't be corrupted by evil. But once exposed to the world, they became the deadliest of all its creatures, and none more so than Maxis.
What curse?
Nala asked. Kassar folded his arms over his chest.
After Lilit made the mistake of seducing a god and becoming pregnant with his child, his goddess wife cursed her and all her kind to never birth a live child or to carry a fetus in their wombs. Rather, they were all to lay eggs and only have serpent children. And so the first race of dragons were born from the cursed Lilitu. Because of what those children were, their mothers hid them away and left them to die in caverns and caves. Over time, the gods learned that these children were excellent survivors, and that their solitary natures made them perfect vassals to guard their most sacred objects.
And what is this object he protects?
The Sol Sangre Real.
She frowned.
Never heard of it.
Kassara scoffed at her ignorance.
It's a bowl his mother stole from his father that can grant immortality to any who drink from it, and take immortality from those who have it. Any weapon that is dipped into a liquid held by it can kill anything it pierces.
More than that, it grants total omnipotency and omniscience.
And you're sure he has it?
Kassar backhanded her. I know the creature I seek. He gestured to the bodies on the floor. And I know how rare a species it is that can render 3 Galu dead with this kind of ease, especially in adolescence. He grabbed her by the throat and yanked her closer.
Find their bitchless mother. We have to leash them and their father and find that bull. If you fail, I'll take great pleasure in spending the rest of eternity making you my own personal bitch.
Brace yourself, Deenie. I can't go any farther.
Adina held tight to her brother's neck as Hayden lost altitude and headed for the burned-out ground far below them, while they flew out of the reach of the demons they'd escaped. Wounded herself, she wasn't able to take dragon form at all. And as they crashed and he hit the ground hard, she felt for him. But true to his nature, he coiled himself around her to protect her as best he could. When they finally stopped falling and rolling, he was flat on his back, his wings spread wide with her tucked in tightly between his massive claws and nestled against his chest. She heard his heart pounding beneath her bruised cheek. They were in some kind of valley underneath a vast, dark sky that was filled with bright stars, a sky she didn't recognize at all.
Hayden?
He groaned.
You alive, little brother?
No, he groused with a light, pain-filled laugh. He loosened his hold so that she could slide out from between his massive talons and check on his wounds. Panting and weak, he tilted his massive, spiked head to the side and stared at her with those eerie, gold, serpentine eyes.
Did they bite you?
She shook her head.
Are you turning Galu?
I don't think so. He hung his huge tongue out the side of his mouth like a dog that was playing dead.
But at this point, I wouldn't mind. So long as it stopped hurting. Ah! Brains! Me need...
He paused to stare at her.
Ah, crap. I'm here with you. If I need brains for sustenance, I'm gonna starve.
Rolling her eyes, she shoved at his claw. He had a twisted sense of humor, but she appreciated him trying to cheer her in the midst of their dire predicament. He was always good at that, always precious to try and make her see the better side of things, when it definitely wasn't her nature to do so. It was why she loved her brother so much, why she would kill or die for him. Thank the gods Hayden was all right, and still Hayden, not some horrid Galu slave. Oddly enough, when the Galu had gone to feed on him, instead of becoming one of them, the feeding had thrown him into his real body in spite of the collar he'd worn, something he'd needed badly, since being trapped as a human for so long had been slowly killing him. Little had they known, her brother was a Katagari Drakos, like their father, who needed to be in his dragon form more than his human one, a secret the two of them had kept from everyone, even their own mother, for fear of what their tribe might do to Hayden should they ever learn the truth. Both of them had grown up with the horror stories of how their father had been driven from their tribe over his animal birth. She would kill before she allowed them to drive her brother away or harm him in any way. And as they lay there, she realized how ragged and raspy his breathing was becoming. Instead of clearing, it was worsening. Adina cupped his dragon cheek.
Slow your breathing before you hyperventilate.
I'm trying.
Hey, look at me.
She stroked the scales of his snout to soothe him.
Focus and breathe. In, out. In, out.
She repeated the steady and slow rhythm until his ragged breathing returned to normal. Since the hour of their birth, he'd always had trouble with his lungs. No one was quite sure why, and the condition had only worsened when he became a dragon at puberty. It left his voice very deep and raspy, barely more than a whisper, that required others to listen very carefully in order to hear him whenever he spoke. Nala had wanted their mother to abandon him to the elements and not waste valuable resources to raise such a weakling. But their mother had refused and fought a hazard to keep him with them. He was her son, and she refused to let anyone harm him. Over the years, Seraphina had taken the heads of any who went after or insulted Hayden in any manner. At least, whenever she heard it. Only Adina knew the real heartaches her brother endured on a daily basis. Since there was nothing their mother could do, he kept most of it from her, and begged Adina to do the same. He was far stronger than anyone knew. Even stronger than she was. Without him, she doubted she would have made it through the misery of their lives. Coughing, he rolled to his side, so that he could breathe more easily. She patted his back, taking care to avoid the cuts the demons had left behind. "Where do you think we are?"
"I don't know."
It was so dark here, and cold, but at least they were no longer frozen in stone. They finally had movement again.
"Should I try to call Matera?"
He wheezed and shook his head.
"It could alert the others where we are."
He wrapped his tail around her and sent a wave of warmth through it for her. Pressing her cheek against his scales, she smiled.
"Thank you."
He tucked his wings in around her to make a leathery blanket.
"Are you warm now?"
"Yes. How did you know I was cold?"
"You're always cold. There's not enough fat on you to keep you warm."
She laughed.
"I'm big enough to whip you."
He snorted a rude sound of denial.
"Only because I let you win."
Suddenly there was a loud, fierce sound over their heads, something that rumbled like vicious thunder. Bright lights danced across the landscape.
"What is that?"
Hayden immediately returned to being human, even though it was extremely difficult for him to do so.
"I don't know, but I doubt it's good."
She took his hand in hers as they stepped back into the shadows and watched the strange things that flew in the sky over their heads. Worse, they could hear voices as others searched for them.
"What's a military installation?"
she projected silently to her brother.
"I don't know, but I don't think we're supposed to be here, and I'm pretty sure that if they catch us, they're going to put us in another cage."
And that she couldn't argue against either. Keeping to the shadows, they ran along a wall of some sort, away from the sounds and machines they didn't understand. Looking at the vegetation, she guessed that they were in a desert, but she had no idea where or what time period. As they reached the end of the wall, she pulled up sharply. She stopped so suddenly that Hayden slammed into her before he saw what had caused her new panic. There in the darkness was another group of demons, waiting to recapture them.